Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Pandemic means that it is marginally out of control. Pandemic means that it has crossed from one country, crossed waters, and it can be easily transported. Dr. Claggett, how are you?
How are you, Dad?
Can you come check my blood pressure? These Negroes about to send me over there.
Ooh, I listened to that. That was entertaining. I haven't seen you riled up like that since college
It bothers me to no end. But anyway, I want to talk about this pandemic because that bothered me too. What is beyond a pandemic? I don't know if we have another name that comes after pandemic. What do we have here with COVID-19? We have seen they opened the state up, and predictably, it opened the level of infection rate. I think we hit 3,000 somewhere the other day in one day. I've come to the conclusion that what we are trying to achieve is herd immunity. That we're trying to rush people to get it in hopes that they will get over it. What are we looking at here?
Remind me to talk about herd immunity, because I think that's actually a very important thing. We can talk a little bit of a study that came out in June. But let's just take a step back and just look at the bigger picture of the United States first, and we'll talk about Georgia very quickly. In the United States, we've had 2.9 million cases of COVID-19. We've had about 248,000 hospitalizations, and we've had 130,000 deaths, which is just astronomical considering the fact the number itself is just unbelievable, but considering the fact that we're really only talking about 5 months, those numbers are just absolutely staggering. Georgia. So let's talk about Georgia. We've had 95,000 cases thus far in Georgia, which is a very high number. We've tested about 949,000 tests, some of those being duplicate tests, by the way, so keep that in mind. But right. Of those tests we've done, about 10% of them have been positive to date, so that's a very high number. We've had 2,860 deaths, and we've had about 11,000, just under 12,000 hospitalizations. But more germane to what we're talking about now, because we saw Georgia go up in March and April, and in May we began to see it go down, and we all had some degree of optimism, though we were very reserved in our spiking of the football, so to speak, and sure enough, as expected, those numbers have come back. So let's talk about the last 14 days. We've seen a change in the number of cases of an increase of 160%, 160.8. So 161% increase in cases in the last 14 days.
Is though positive results?
That's right, positive cases. So in the last 14 days, we've seen the number of positive cases go up by 161%. If we look at the percent change in positive rate we've had, which accounts for about 42% increase in positive rate, and then our positivity rate, meaning of the people we test, what percentage of those turn positive? For the last 7 days, that has now been over 10% consistently for the last 2 weeks, actually, but about 12.9%. So
let's slow that down. So of those who are testing in the last 7 days, you said?
7 days.
The rate of infection of the virus has exceeded where it has been, and it has actually climbed to 12% up from 10%. So we are catching this virus at a higher rate and faster than we had at any point of our analysis of this infection.
Yes. So if we look at our positivity rate, again, that positivity rate being of the people we test, what percentage of those people, those tests, will come back positive? That number is now sitting at about 12%, meaning that just over one out of every 10 people that get tested will be positive. Okay, so where has that been? At one point in time, we dipped well below 10%. So let me give you the historical numbers on where we were percentage of positivity. Our positive rate got down as low as 3.9% the week of May 11th through the 17th. So when we were doing well and we were testing people, only about 3.9% of people were turning positive.
Right.
And that lasted for about 2 weeks in May, from May 11th through May 23rd. And since that time, since May 23rd, we've had a steady increase in our positivity rate. The first week after that, it was 7%, then it went to 7.8%, then it went to 7.1%, then it went to 9%, then it went to 12.6%, and now it's at just over 12%. So we are seeing a higher percentage of people that are positive. Now, what's a positive on this? If we look at our number of deaths, those numbers are decreasing. So at one point in time, when we were measuring number of people dying by the week, our worst week, we had 265 people die. That was the week of April 27th through May 3rd. This past week, we had 82 people die. So we are seeing the number of people dying go down.
Okay.
So there's a lot of different reasons for that.
We know demographics, right? There was a point at which you could not get a test if you were if you showed no signs. That was a point that young people wouldn't get thrown in the pool. What is the demographic breakdown? Do you have idea who's coming back positive now?
We don't have those specific, or I don't have those specific numbers for Georgia, though we know that the age has decreased across the country by about a decade and a half. In Florida, for example, the average age is about 33. So we know the numbers are going down, and that likely contributes to the lower death rate, because we know younger people are healthier, have less comorbidities, so therefore their likelihood of surviving the disease is significantly higher. The other factor we think plays into our death rate dropping is obviously awareness. People become more aware of the disease, so they're more likely to come in and receive treatment earlier. And we have made some progress as it relates to treatment, not cure. So in treatment terms, the two drugs that have really jumped out to us, remdesivir, remember we talked about that some weeks ago, an antiviral. We know that the studies on that have shown that while it does not impact the overall mortality or death rate, it does shorten the duration of the disease by approximately 4 days. So those who get remdesivir, and those are typically the older, the more ill patients, the sicker patients, we can reduce their illness by about 4 days. We did not see a significant improvement in their overall mortality. And then steroids. We now realize that the use of steroids, certain steroids, do have a positive impact on death, on overall mortality. So there was a study that
using them helps slow it down, or use them hastily?
Using them increases the odds that you will survive if you are within a certain type of disease.
Gotcha.
So it's not for everybody. So there was a study done that was published in Nature. It was done in June, and it looked at the use of steroids in three separate groups. It looked at the use of steroids in people who were COVID positive but were not symptomatic, meaning they did not have low oxygen levels. Then it looked at the use of steroids in patients who were COVID positive that required oxygen by in their nose, nasal cannula, or by mask. And then it looked at the most severe patients, which are patients on a ventilator, a machine that breathes for them, tube in their lungs, so forth. So it looked at all three groups and the use of steroids. And what it showed was steroids used in the first group of people who were COVID positive but were not requiring any form of oxygen, it showed no improvement in that group as it relates to improvement of death or who eventually died. Looking at 28 days post-treatment and the likelihood of dying. In fact, it actually showed that that group had a higher incidence of death. So we know in people who are COVID positive that are not requiring oxygen at all, that we probably should not be giving those patients steroids because the studies do not show any improvement. And arguably, the studies have shown that those people actually do worse.
All right, Dr. Clay, now, put a pin in that. We got to take a break. We're going to skip our two-minute workout. I want you to finish this thought on the other side of the break, all right? Again, we're getting our COVID-19 update. If you got questions, come and make the point that you were making.
We were talking about the use of steroids. We talked about remdesivir. We talked about the use of steroids in select patients. Do not take steroids on your own without speaking to doctors about its effectiveness. But the first group were the patients who were COVID positive but essentially asymptomatic, did not require oxygen, at least did not require oxygen in any capacity. We did not see a benefit with the use of steroids. In fact, perhaps even saw a slight worse outcome using those. The second two groups, which were those who were on oxygen by nasal cannula, by nose or face mask, and then the second, third group, which is those who required a mechanical ventilator or were intubated with a tube in their mouth, those patients who were placed on steroids did show a significant improvement as it relates to the outcome being death. We did see a reduction or decrease in death in those cases when they were placed on steroids, with the biggest difference being seen in those patients who were on the ventilator. Now, steroids are not used for everybody. There are some reasons we don't use steroids. If we suspect you have an underlying infection outside of this infection, we do not put people on steroids, and there's some other reasons. So that being said, our treatments have improved, and with our treatments improving, our mortality numbers have improved as well. The other thing that you brought up, I'll stop there if you have a question, but the other thing you brought up was really about herd immunity. So we can talk about that as well, but I'll stop there and see if you have any questions about the treatment.
Well, one other thing we're seeing, because explain to people, because a lot of time I was just reading this weekend, because I'm still reading all this. Tell us about, because you all said in medical terms, we said ventilator, and you alluded to it, intubation. Tell people what that process is, that essentially this machine is taking over your breathing, and you're basically in a comatose-like state, essentially. Explain to us what that means when you're intubated or on a ventilator.
Yeah. Yeah, ventilator, intubation, ventilator, these are all similar terms we use. But we use a machine to breathe for patients with a tube that we insert into their lungs, through their mouth, down into their lungs. We do that to help them breathe, to assist them with breathing. If we don't believe that they are able to maintain an adequate level of oxygen in their blood for different reasons. In this case, it's because they have an infection in their lungs. So because they have the infection in their lungs, they're unable to get adequate oxygen in, so we can deliver a higher content of oxygen into the lungs. In addition to that, they may not be able to breathe out carbon dioxide, which is a byproduct, and that machine can help with that. We call that ventilation. So that's what we call a ventilator, or we call that process being intubated, because we place the tube down into the lungs.
But the patient is not conscious for the most
part? They can be conscious because, remember, the degree of being conscious is really a brain issue, cognitive brain issue. That has nothing to do with the breathing of the lungs. Now, so people often will...
Right. When you get to COVID, deep COVID state, the people not just lay and you having to have the machine breathe for you.
You can be awake on the machine. In fact, a lot of times we have people awake on the machine because the machine can breathe for you. It doesn't always breathe, depending upon the settings that we put the machine on. It may not do all of your breathing. We may actually want you to do some of that breathing so you're awake to do that. Now, sometimes it's uncomfortable for some people, or in some cases we're breathing for the most part for the patient and for sake of resting them and making them comfortable, we'll give them medicine to sedate them so they're not aware.
Because the tube down their throat, they had to be fed intravenously.
That's right. IV. So
you're not going to sit up there and eat no Salisbury steak. You'd be given medication, which leads to wasting and loss of weight sometimes, or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a whole, there's a very comprehensive set of things that we do when people get intubated because they're unable to do some of those things independently. Those were the two treatments that today that are really, we believe,
I was going to ask about the third one. Well, the turning people on their stomach is another one that when they get intubated that they're finding. Is that a protocol that they y'all standardly use? Is that being helpful?
Yeah, so we discovered this some time ago that patients will do better if they are in what we call a prone position, lying on their stomach. And we know that patients who have certain conditions that involve the lung, that studies have shown that they do better if they are lying on a prone position versus lying supine on the back. So, yeah, we'll do that with patients as well. We'll switch them over to lying on their stomach and or their chest and stomach.
All right, and so your next point was what?
So you had brought up herd immunity. Now, you believe that, I don't want to restate what you believe, but let's talk about herd immunity. Herd immunity is the idea that enough people within a community have the infection and therefore the rate at which it can be spread is significantly reduced because we think herd immunity occurs when somewhere around 70% of the population is infected with it. So the idea being you get infected with the infection, an infection, you build up an immune response to it. That gives you an immunity because you have antibodies floating around that are now protecting you moving forward. So if you come in contact with the infection again, you already have an immune system that has been sensitized to the infection, and therefore you don't get the infection again or you don't get significant symptoms from it. So that's the idea. Now, we don't know if that actually occurs with COVID-19. The data is still out on that. We'll need some more time. As you pointed out, we're evolving in this process. But there was a small study done in June, released in Nature in June, in a Nature magazine in June, a very small study in China, where they looked actually at patients who were asymptomatic with COVID. So they had come into the hospital for whatever reason, and they tested them and they discovered them incidentally to have COVID. And they had no other symptoms. They had no symptoms of COVID for the 14 days preceding that test. And they checked their blood to determine if they had antibodies. And they detected antibodies to the infection.
All right.
And then they checked their blood those 14 days after discharge from the hospital to see if they still had antibodies. And what they discovered was 40% of those patients did not have antibodies.
So what does that mean?
So that means that the immunity that we thought they had,
they did not have.
They did not have 14 days later. So they didn't maintain immunity. Now, they also looked at symptomatic patients who were tested positive for COVID but also had symptoms. either 14 days prior to the test or immediately at the test.
Hold on. I want you to do that because you're hitting on something very important. And I want you to explain it more in depth. And I want people to hear it. We got to take a quick break because people have had the antibody test and tests have the nasal test negative, antibody test positive. They think like what his name, the Cuomo guy, who said now, you know, he's probably what, at least 14 days after no symptoms of 3 days of clear symptoms. And now he says he has antibodies that he can donate to help others. Is that possible? Are you saying there's no scientific conclusiveness that is, you know, beyond a scientific certainty that is possible? Or whatever you're saying, I won't put words in your mouth. I want you to explain it to us in the way that you can. Also, get your question in because we ain't going to keep Doc all night and all day. It's a week. Do he have either Dr. Claggett or Dr. MJ Collier on here? Is we want you to understand the symptomology of this virus, what you feel, what you may experience. At 5:45 today from Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms' Twitter account, at Keisha Bottoms, COVID-19 has literally hit home. I've had no symptoms and have tested positive. That is the day at 5:45. Of course, it has been reported by all of the news outlet. The mayor has led on this issue like no other. She's been very clear that wear a mask. She's done everything, beg, encourage people. And so she's in our prayers. You know, this mayor has, again, when you're mayor, you're expected to be and here and there and everywhere. And Dr. Claggett, what do you make of that? The mayor makes a statement. She COVID-19 positive, asymptomatic, and I'm assuming it doesn't say as much information. She's entitled to all the privacy. She didn't have to share that with us. What did that say to you?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak to any individual person, including the mayor's health. I mean, she has her own physicians that can advise her and interpret her symptoms and test results. But generally speaking, if somebody is positive, I'm not sure if she means she's positive because she tested positive,
right,
by,
she tested positive by some, right,
PCR,
right,
nasal swab, or whether she believes she's positive because she had antibody testing that was positive, or she has symptoms that are classic for it. It makes it very difficult to interpret because she wasn't very specific about it.
Right.
But generally speaking, if somebody's positive, again, remember, the overwhelming majority of people who test positive will do fine. We do recommend that they isolate and quarantine themselves. If they have symptoms, that we monitor them exceptionally close. But the majority of people will get over this. We need to watch them very closely for the classic symptoms, which we know are fever, muscle.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, go over those again so people can kind of do a self-check. What are the classic symptoms and what have been added on? Because we've done add on to one or two since we first saw this thing.
Yeah, so classic symptoms of a fever, fatigue, muscle aches, joint pains, cough, typically non-productive, and then shortness of breath as well. You can have any of them or none of them. And there are some more severe symptoms that can occur in certain situations. We've seen an increase in clotting, so you can have symptoms related to a clot, whether that's the lung or other organs that are affected.
All right. So if you were treating a positive patient, you know, we're going to take the mayor out of the equation because, again, she didn't have to share that with her. Asymptomatic, right, with all of the things, you know, clotting and all that, what would be some of the confirmatory or precautionary or preventing testing that you would also want to see, a blood work you would want to see?
So before we do that, let me just close out the discussion about
herd
the
immunity.
Antibody.
Well, the antibody, exactly.
Antibody. So we talked about herd immunity and the antibody, and we talked about the study. that showed that in asymptomatic patients, and again, this is a very small group of people, so right. It was not peer-reviewed, so that it needs to be peer-reviewed. But we saw that in that particular study, that 40% of patients who are asymptomatic, mm-hmm. If you check them 8 weeks later, 40% of them did not show any prevalence of persistent antibodies, which would suggest.
Would you say conversely, 60% did?
Yeah, but you're right. But even more concerning, 40% did not.
Yeah, so this notion that you are cured, if you will, and then can fight it off may not be.
And not get it again because you have long-lasting immunity. We're not certain of that. It may be the case, but we're not certain of it. Now, we did.
How often would you?
Hold on now. Let me finish with this because this is important. They looked at symptomatic patients who were COVID positive that were symptomatic, meaning had symptoms, and they did the same thing. They looked at their antibodies eight weeks later, and 13% of those patients did not show persistent antibodies either. So what we did see was that the antibodies were in higher prevalence in the symptomatic patients 14 days later. But there was also a number of them that did not show persistent antibodies. So I say that all to say that the study, again, not peer-reviewed, small group, so there are some questions about the study.
Certainly.
The study does at least make us cognizant of the fact that we've got to really study this to make sure that people actually do develop some long-term immunity, meaning they cannot get the infection again. We don't know that to be the case at this point. So if that is not the case, then this concept of herd immunity, then we are fooling ourselves to believe that people will get herd immunity.
Now, let's go to the individual patient. How often should they either get the nose test and the antibody test? Should that be an ongoing kind of thing, asymptomatic, but they want to check and see if the antibodies are still present or if the infection is present? How often would you recommend?
So if somebody tests positive for COVID, you're saying they test positive
in the nose, they're negative. They're negative on the PCR, whatever y'all call it. What do y'all call it?
PCR, polymerase chain reaction.
The PCR is negative, which is the super, that is the gold standard of whether you got it at that particular moment in time. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so you test negative for that, and you test positive for the antibody test, which says that there's antibodies present. You're saying in a very small study that that may disappear. I'm asking you, how often should they take both or either one, or is that necessary? People who want to know.
Okay, so you're kind of mixing apples and oranges, so let me kind of back down a little bit. Let's talk about the PCR test. Mm-hmm. The PCR test, a polymerase chain reaction test, is a nasal swab or oral swab, and it may detect the RNA virus. If it does, that is suggestive that you have the infection.
Yeah. I'm asking a very specific question.
I got it. Your question is not, it's a good question, but it's a little misleading. If your PCR is negative, but your antibody test is positive, the antibody test is not as good a test as the PCR for the following reason. That the antibody test in a population that has a low prevalence of the disease, which we really in relative terms have a low prevalence of the disease, the value of the antibody test is what we call a negative predictive value. Meaning that it's more informative to us if the patient is negative. So if they have a negative antibody test, it tells us that they don't have it. So it can be a little bit misleading if your PCR is negative and then your antibody is positive. I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not sure we're 100% can I say 100% that you've had the infection. What we can tell you is you've tested negative by PCR, so in all likelihood, you don't have an active infection. We cannot conclusively say that you've had that infection in the past, so it's probably likely.
Okay. All right, we got to take a break here. We'll come back. If you got any questions for Dr. Claggett, we'll be glad to answer those. We're praying for our mayor. She's my mayor, too. Keisha Lance Volum, who in a tweet at 5:45 said that she has tested positive. I want to read the actual tweet itself so that I don't get it wrong. And this is being reported on WSB, bunch of news outlet. So this is not something I'm making up.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.